Good evening, and welcome to Boston University's World of Ideas. I'm Gina Cervetti. Last Tuesday evening at the Sy Center, Boston University's African Presidential Archives and Research Center hosted the second annual African Presidential Roundtable Public Forum. This year's symposium featured former African heads of state discussing a range of issues impacting U.S.-Africa relations and followed closed-door talks on the subjects. Introducing the forum's participants is Ali Hassan Mwinyi, former president of Tanzania. President Mwinyi.
I am honored to be introducing this distinguished panel of my peers at the second African Presidential Roundtable 2004 forum at Boston University. The panelists, who almost need no introduction, His Excellency Nisiphor Soglo, former President of the Republic of Benin, His Excellency Sakwit Ketumile Masire, former President of the Republic of Botswana, His Excellency Antonio Montereo, former President of the Republic of Cape Verde, His Excellency Aristides Maria Pereira, former President of the Republic of Cape Verde, and His Excellency Carl Augusto Hoffmann, former President of the Republic of Mauritius and current African President Presidential Archive and Research Center, Belfour African President in Residence. The moderator for the African Presidential Roundtable 2004 forum is Boston's own Karen Holmes Ward of WCVB Television. Karen Holmes Ward is the director of public African and community services, as well as host and executive producer of City Line, WCVB Television, weekly magazine program, which addresses the problems, concerns, and accomplishments of people of color living in Boston and its suburbs. Many notable people, including Minister Louis Farrakhan, Attorney Lani Guinea, Oprah Winfrey, and Denzel Washington, have been interviewed by Holmes Ward for City Line. Ms. Ward, I give you the floor, and I look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you for that introduction, Your Excellency. Bonjour, buenos dias, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to my alma mater, Boston University. Things have changed quite a bit since I attended school here. I won't tell you how many years ago. That's my secret. As His Excellency was reading my introduction, He indicated that I was from Botswana and Director of African Affairs. All this time, I thought I had hailed from Ohio, but I'm happy to see, Your Excellency, that you consider me close to your heart and your homeland. This whole 2004 forum has been about learning more about capitalization in Africa and democracy, and setting up good governance in Africa. These gentlemen with us are living examples of how that can be achieved. There are two gentlemen on the stage who were not introduced. They are our interpreters, and we'll be happy to share any information with our heads of state if it needs to be translated. I want to get started and ask you gentlemen to respond to a statement that was, in fact, released in London at your press briefing there, and I believe that Your Excellency made this comment, and I quote, "Finally, the present global crisis gives us an urgency to our concerns about Africa's needs. We understand the need to rebuild Afghanistan. We understand the need to rebuild Iraq. We understand the need for the United States to focus on the terrorism that rocked that country on 9/11. But having said that, let us add that the need to deal with terrorism should not become another reason for Africa's neglect." And I'd like to start, gentlemen, by asking, do you think that the United States is in danger of again neglecting Africa? Who would like to start? Yes, sir.
When you are touched directly, like the States, United States has been touched by September 11, sometimes this is so hard to you that you tend to focus yourself on that aspect and you forget other things. There is a tendency, and we can feel it in Africa, that you focus a bit too much on the aspect of terrorism. And by focusing that, you forget that the United States of America is a leader of the world today. And unfortunately, or fortunately for you, you are unique. There is not anymore the Cold War. So you are the only one leading. As a leader, it's like a father. You must look. You must give the same attention to every one of the members of the family. And we in Africa, we feel that we are left a little bit aside because of this. But we are part and partners with you for the fight against terrorism. We are. We are not against that. But on the other hand, we have other problems where we need our big brothers to give us a hand.
Our President Bush said in his most recent address to the nation, he sees America and sees his role as president to be a leader in shaping democracy around the world, liberating countries around the world, providing leadership, America providing leadership around the world. Do you see or do you think that President Bush and our White House has shown, in your estimation, the right kind of leadership?
The taste of the pudding is in the eating. we cannot go ahead and say we doubt the intent that is in President Bush's statement. But we take heart from what he has said, that indeed America has forgotten Africa for too long. And as America assumes her responsibility for putting out fires elsewhere on Earth, they will remember Africa. They will remember that we are in the grips of natural disasters. We are in the grips of a post-colonial era. We are in the grips of perhaps our former leaders having mismanaged our economies. And that we did make those mistakes really should not be visited upon us. Now is the time when, together with the present leadership of Africa, we must make amends. We must come to grips with the problems and forget about the past and live in the now and the future.
Does anyone else have a comment about President Bush and our perceived leadership currently in the Middle East and how you'd like to have that translate to Africa? Yes, sir, Your Excellency.
Africa has a new group or crop of leadership. As such, we have learned from many mistakes that have been done by our predecessors, ourselves, and because of that, the United States does not need to fear, because we are a people who have experienced what has gone before us, and we have learned our lessons, in other words. So there's no need at all for the United States to fear.
What are some of the roles that you think the United States should be playing? How can the United States government help your governments in promoting the agendas in your country?
I think that it is not something everyone understands perfectly, because talking about Benin, during many years, we were involved in kind of tropical Marxist-Leninist type of government. And our people work very hard to have something different, to move to a democratic society. It takes time. And also, it's happened also not only in Africa, but in Central Europe and in the Soviet Union. When you have to adjust from, let's say, state-owned economy to market-oriented economy, it takes time. And the only issue involved here is to know at what speed you have to do that. I remember for many years in World Bank, IMF, and for the part one country in the Western world, they want to rush us. And you have a word. When you are rushing, you know, people to come from state-owned economy to a market-oriented one, the country can collapse. It happened in Soviet Union. It happened also in central part of Europe, Eastern Europe. They used to quote president of what they call the former Czechoslovakia, Václav Havel. You have to rush. And they used to say that when you have to jump on a very big, let's say, canyon, you can't do that one in two jumps, but in one, if not, you are going to fall down. It's what they want to do with many African countries. And you have also the way Chinese play the same, I think, exercise. Deng Xiaoping, when it is McNamara, the president of the board when I was for a while, went to see him. I have billion of dollars for you. If you take this kind of medicine, he said no. In China, when you have to cross a river, you put your foot first to make sure that you are very stable. And after that, you can move over to see if the overside is stable. If not, you can't come back. I think it is the kind of thing we need to be done, because knowing that China can do that. They have this progressive way, I think, to adjust their society politically, because they used to say that if in the rural area, people don't understand what you're talking about, you are going, I think, to have a failure. But step by step, the progressive way, now China, everyone is, you know, in front of them, you have the red carpet. I remember, because I'm talking about my own experience, when I was executive at the World Bank, on my right, I have a Chinese executive director, Mr. Su, and the left side, she was the Indian. Sue said, we are not going to take the money. We are going to take the money our own speed. You are, of course, starving. So you have no choice. What we hope, of course, now, it is to make sure that we are going to take in account the lesson we draw from that and to go at our own speed to adjust our economy. It's the answer I can give to your question.
Your Excellency, Mwine and Soglo make very good points. You spoke about putting out fires, the United States putting out fires. You spoke about the West rushing, and admittedly, Americans are always looking for the quick fix. We want to come in, finish it, and move on to the next thing. Understanding that that's how our culture works, and understanding that we may not understand how your culture works, how can we bring the two together for the benefit of Africa?
If the United States of America has reached that level of development, you have taken years for that, sometimes centuries to be able to reach that level. And don't forget that people move from all Europe to come to here, if I can use the words, which is now commonly used. But we from Africa, we have just started in that kind of thing. It's nearly less than 50 years that we are taking our country in ends. Independence in Africa, the first one was in the early 60s. Before that, all countries in Africa was under colonial rule. So how can you imagine that we can do in less than 50 years that you have taken hundreds of years and sometimes thousands of years to reach? We want you to understand that specificity. If you give us time, we will reach that level. And we have shown you. The other day I went to the marathon of Boston. You see, we are very good in marathon. And we can beat you. So give us this time and you will not be disappointed.
Time and patience.
Yes.
It's what we need to display. As we are being patient and taking time, what would you like to see put in place now that will result in better investment in the future? Your Excellency?
Well, I would say that actually this conference does give us a way of how to get out of that situation. In other words, we will come to terms. We shall begin to understand your pace. You will in turn understand our pace. We shall come to a compromise when perhaps we will not move at your pace, nor at our pace, but at a pace which is mutually convenient. And with that, especially in this globalized world, that really should not be difficult. And as I said, the discussions we had in London, the discussions we had here since yesterday and today are very much enlightening and inspire hope that eventually we shall be moving at the same pace, with one step, in unison, to achieve our goal, our mutual goal, I dare say, because, as you said, President Bush has expressed, on behalf of his government, on behalf of the Americans, the willingness to help, to the extent possible, the situation in which Africa is.
Yes, sir.
Somente o seguinte, só o facto de estarmos aqui,
just the fact that we're here,
e se repararem que nós dois, os ex-presidentes de Cabo Verde, temos estado calados, não temos dado uma contribuição.
You notice that we two ex-presidents of Cabo Verde have been quiet, we haven't yet contributed to this dialogue.
Só isso pode dar-vos uma ideia, digamos, das dificuldades que temos em África.
That can give you, in itself, an idea of the difficulty we have in Africa. With the colonial system, Africa was divided. And they wanted to impose a certain culture and their language as well. Some speak English, some French, some Portuguese, and even some that speak Spanish. And it's a very big, it's a hardship.
I've been in a situation
where I was before an English speaking, another English speaking head of state, and I could not communicate with him. So that gives you an idea of one of the obstacles Africa has to occupying the place it should in the world. And I just want to say I trust everything that all my colleagues are saying here. And we're very confident in the future.
Estamos confiados no futuro e até porque no trabalho que já fizemos durante esses poucos anos, porque estivemos colonizados durante uma série de tempo, inclusive com não só houve todo o tráfico de escravos, mas depois houve o sistema colonial, os trabalhos forçados, toda essa divisão da África, mesmo as guerras que há África, é praticamente um resultado do sistema colonial, que dividiu a África, separando povos, separando famílias.
Not just the work we've done in these very few years of independence, but the effect of all the slavery, the colonial system, the forced labor, all the wars that we've seen in Africa. All of these are factors that these are very big handicaps. And in a certain fashion, we have overcome a lot of these already.
And we have to have more
public awareness of Africa's situation, and for that we have to thank Ambassador Stith for his valuable contribution in letting people know about the reality of Africa. Because only if you know the reality can you know how to help. And we're precisely on this path of letting you know who we are and what our problems are. That's the small remark I wanted to make.
Thank you. Yes. Your Excellency.
You asked us what could the United States do to help us. First and foremost, there should be no impediment to trade.
No impediments to
trade.
Trade.
Yes. Trade, world trade, is very important. And in this, there should be a level playing field. When you have impediments, you can't sell this or that or the other. You could only leave your market open, but you can't enter into another market, somebody else's market. That is an impediment. We would like you to see free trade in the real sense of the word. Thank you.
Very good. Free and open trade. I want you audience members to begin to prepare your questions. We have about 45 to 50 minutes to entertain questions from the audience. There was a lady in the aisle here that had a question.
Yes, good evening, Your Excellencies. It is a pleasure to be here. I'm Barbara Brown from Boston University, and my question is directed particularly at His Excellency from Benin, as well as His Excellency from Tanzania, two countries that are cotton exporters. And President Mwinyi had referred to the need for open trade, and I understand that cotton is one of those goods that the United States has restrictions on. The importation of more efficiently produced cotton from Africa. And I would appreciate your comments on how we may overcome this impasse and what impact it has on your countries, the impasse that we have now in the protectionist policy of the United States. Thank you.
Well, the negative impact is obvious. When we produce cotton, and we would have liked to sell it to any willing buyers, United States included. When we find that some buyers cannot buy our cotton because the policies of their countries does not allow them to do so. So we are left with a dilemma of doing whatever we can do with it or sell it as cheaply as possible. And that does not pay the efforts of the farmer. So we are negatively affected by some countries having restrictions in buying some of our products.
Certainly, there could be a short-term solution to that problem. Is there one?
Buy all our cotton.
That's it. That's right. So there are certain...
Perhaps I should give you one example. My own experience. Not with cotton this time. With something else. I happen to be a farmer, or I'm trying to be one. And I have a herd of cattle. I produce something like 400 liters of milk per day. I have no market for it. I sell some of it. When I'm lucky, in a day when I'm lucky, I sell it all. In other days, I don't manage to do so. So when I complain, we are told that, well, do something else. Make butter. Butter, margarine, whatever. But then, if I were to do that, I'll have to compete with butter, margarine, et cetera, et cetera, coming from the USA, which, because of the subsidy, United States, my milk will be more expensive. My butter will be more expensive. And then, again, I won't find a buyer. So what I do now, I sell my milk at one-fifth of a dollar per bottle. that if you are in my country, I would sell you five bottles with $1. And with that income, I cannot even pay those my laborers, my helpers. I have to put my hand in my pocket to give this unwilling aid to the workers. So these are the kind of problems that we have in our countries. Mm-hmm. Subsidies. To us, they are a killer, if I could put it that way.
I think it is a very serious and vital issue raised by the lady. I remember that for many years, World Bank doesn't want to lend money for cash crop. At that time, the idea was you are going to sell cocoa, coffee, cotton. So with the money, of course, you can't buy from us cash crop, corn, maize, different kind of thing like that. The only thing they forgot to tell us, it is they have subsidies for that. So we move, because everyone can produce only cocoa, coffee, because, of course, you know, United States is not growing coffee and cocoa, but we can't have, because we need to have, you know, what I have on my, you know, some fabric from our country, for our continent. So when we develop the cotton production in my country, for a while we are the third producer of cotton after Egypt and Mali in Africa. So we have the feeling that now we are on our way to be prosperous. But the part one countries, Europe, of course, United States and the others, they give subsidies. We can't compete on the world market. It's one of the serious issues you have to face. You can't ask us, okay, don't develop. We are not going to lend you, I think, money to develop your cash crop. If you are going to sell on the world market, you can't have enough money to feed yourself. And now we are moving in some export project, and we have to face this problem. So it is one of the challenges we need to talk about. I remember we used to talk about this issue to when I wasn't head of state, to the others. When I became, I used to talk to my friends, and I was very pleased to see when I met the president of Burkina Faso. He told me, you know, you left, I think, power. Now we in Burkina Faso, we have a good producer of cotton. And we are over, you know, what you are producing in your country now. But we are losing money because of subsidies. So I am very, you know, pleased to see him. He was the first one to jump in Geneva. He didn't stop in Paris to tell that, you know, it is time, I think, to stop and to think about this issue. So the rally to this meeting to talk about this issue, now it is on the table. It is a very, of course, important issue, political one, of course, in each country. But they have to give room to us to maneuver. If not, they don't want us to die. If we want to buy products coming from the United States, we need to have, I think, you know, foreign exchange. So it is one of the crucial issues involved in what, you know, President Mouini said, because the problem Africa has now, it is access to market in the same condition with everyone.
It seems simplistic for me to overstate that these policies that the United States government and that the West have in place, subsidies, the imbalance in trade, are designed to keep power ultimately with the West. For you to become an equal trade partner means that the West would have to share power. This is the root of it.
You're perfectly right, because it is the issue we are talking about, you know, during all this meeting in London, of course, here too. Now, I think the problem is on the face of each one. You can't hide the statistics. They are there. What we are going to do, because, of course, we need to live the only way, because they use, I think, IMF and World Bank to break our barrier. Because Europe, I remember when I came, I was in the secondary school in France. America was feeding Europe. They built the agriculture, you know, they have, you know, this kind of barrier. So they can't develop production of wheat, of corn, of different kind of things like that. In some ways, I think Africa needs a market to protect and to develop some crops. If you don't understand that, because, of course, I think they use IMF sometimes and also World Bank to say, you need money, we are going to break your barrier. How can we grow if we don't have a minimum of protection? During the discussion, someone is talking about privatization. When they come, they want you to move quickly. But if you take the cotton production, because it is something so important for our farmers, we have a mechanism where when you produce, you have a price. You are sure that you can sell the product at this price. And, you know, and step by step, it is security for you. Now they said you need to privatize everything. But it is this kind of marketing board, kind of protection for our market, for our small farmers, how we are going to compete on the world market against big producers with subsidies. It is one of the challenges we have to face.
Excellency?
Perhaps to better understand the position, we have to discuss this under the context of the situation in Africa. There is a story that before the French Revolution, when Marie Antoinette was told the people are starving, there's no bread, they said, give them cake. Sometimes we find ourselves in that situation. Agriculture is the only industry in Africa to which we can almost employ the labor of every person. And when it is undermined, the livelihood that we derive from the one industry that is available to us, then we are undone. Let's remember, even America, capital formation started with agriculture, and it is agriculture which financed other developments. And therefore, when we are throttled by policies which deny us of markets in the developed country, that is very hurting, is very killing. Let us also remember that it is the basic law of economics that every country must produce that which it is best suited to produce. And it is, you are best suited perhaps to produce more sophisticated things. We are better suited to produce agricultural products. Botswana beef is one of the best on the face of the earth. And why should you be eating corn-fed beef with insipid taste? When you could eat beef which has got that sharp taste because it is grass-grown. This is one of our dilemma. Shall I say this is our basic dilemma, being denied to produce that which we can best compete in with the rest of the world.
Thank you. Do we have a question on this side? Yes, Ma'am Negresu, please state your question and give us your name.
Good evening, Your Excellencies and Ms. Ward. My name is Donna Hilton Van E, and I am Liberian. I have a question that concerns war on our continent. As past head of states, what would your position be or any suggestion you would proffer to the government of the United States, considering this forum is African United States relations, as far as advocating for peace and initiating stability into the country so that the power, in fact, is restored to the people? Anyone, I would appreciate your comment. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, I can speak about that because I was for a while chairman of ECOWAS, in charge of issue in Liberia, and we had the Cotonou Accord. It didn't work. I have a feeling that in West Africa, and not only in West Africa, but also because when people are fighting, you have, you know, behind the scene, people putting, you know, oil on the in the fire. It is to make sure that, of course, United States, European countries, the African also, because they are involved, to know that without peace in Liberia, in Sierra Leone, in Côte d'Ivoire, in many Western African countries, if you don't have stability, you are not, I think, in peace. Because when the fire starts in your neighborhood, it's going to burn you. So the agreement they have in Accra, of course, they send people and, from UN soldiers in Liberia. I had the feeling that, of course, for many years, everyone knows the reason of all this problem. It's what the French call non-assistance à personne en danger, non-assistance to nation in danger. Everyone knows that the corruption is there. You have kind of non-interest for the suffering of the people because they are far. They are not strategical. And no one is coming from outside. Inside of the country, the balance of power coming from the political parties, religious you know, groups, even some part of the armies, everything, you know, is, you know, still for 10, 20 years. At the end, it's what happened with Samuel Doe and the others. I remember I conduct a mission of election in Sierra Leone at the place of President Carter, because he was involved in Cuba at that time. He asked me to conduct, you know, the team of his foundation. When I met the president, what he told me? He said it is, you know, the same kind of problem which destroyed Liberia, who made, you know, the situation horrible you have in my country. They cut the, you know, the leg, the different kind of thing, because corruption is so high, no punition, impunity. And now, it's when everything was over, they are coming in. So we have to rebuild such a beautiful country like that. So it is an issue because, of course, you are pleased to see UK coming with Tony Blair in Sierra Leone, to see United States to come in Liberia, because it is their duty. And the European country also, the others, and the African country, because they're fighting each other. Now they remove, of course, Charles Taylor from the country, and they have to monitor that by the African Western country in Liberia, but the other coming from outside. So it is, you know, because everyone knows that after Liberia, you have Sierra Leone, you have Côte d'Ivoire, this kind of domino process. If you don't join hands, everyone is going to be burned. And to have a democratic society, not a dictator in charge. So it is a hope. I can't say more.
And now for our closing remarks, I'd like to ask His Excellency President Monteiro, also former president of the Republic of Cape Verde, to come to the podium.
Ambassador Steve, dear colleagues, heads of states, excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for attending the African Presidential Forum 2004, hosted by the African Presidential Archives and Research Center at Boston University, APARI. Throughout the year, I looked forward to the African Presidential Roundtable. The African Presidential Roundtable is an extraordinary opportunity for dialogue. Dialogue is important in a world as divided as ours at this time. In a post-9/11 world, discourse is dominated by bombing of Madrid and instability in Iraq. Your former Defense Secretary, William Cohen, had it right when he said that our challenge is not so much to find fault in why we experienced 9/11, but how we find the fault lines that enable us to prevent another 9/11. In fact, it is necessary to formulate policies that minimize enemies and maximize friends. There are common interests around the world. There are countries in Africa that are trying desperately to fashion their own version of the American dream. Help your friends increase their capacity to improve the lives of their citizens so that they see themselves as part of a global community. The United States of America is doing some of the right things, stepping up efforts to combat the AIDS pandemic, creating the Millennium Challenge Fund, and extending the African Growth and Opportunity Act are among the right steps. But more can be done. to ensure the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is a global reality. Dialogue like that which we have had tonight can advance these goals. In closing, I'd like to thank my peers for their attendance and contribution. Each head of state here is a shining example of Africa's best leadership and bright future. I'd like to thank Boston University for its commitment to international excellence. I'd like to praise the African Presidential Archives and Research Center at Boston University for its ingenuity, and thank APARC for hosting such an important convention. I'd like to thank the citizens of Boston for the warm welcome and generosity. Events like the African Presidential Roundtable 2004 provide an opportunity to burnish Boston's image as a truly inclusive and world-class city. Your support is integral to the substance and lasting impact of this critical dialogue. I hope you leave tonight's forum more aware of Africa's potential. Thank you.
You've been listening to this year's African Presidential Roundtable 2004 Public Forum, sponsored by Boston University's African Presidential Archives and Research Center. For a CD or cassette of Boston University's World of Ideas, call 1-800-909-9287. CDs and cassettes are $15, which includes shipping and handling. Tonight's program was produced by Michael Garth and Matt Odette, with help from Boris Trapotsky. Our web producer is Angel Cazelli. I'm Gina Cervetti. Thanks for joining us.